Item number five, which is a briefing, Puget Sound Recreational Fisheries Enhancement. So I will turn that over to Ryan.
Actually, I'm Lori Peterson with the Puget Sound Salmon Management Group, and I have with me today Ryan Lothrop, our Puget Sound Recreational Fisheries Manager, and Dave Knutson, and Norm Reihart. Dave is the chair of our Oversight Committee, and Norm is the vice chair. And today we'll be talking about, it's just a briefing on the Puget Sound Recreational Salmon and Marine Fish Enhancement Program. I'll abbreviate it as PSRFE throughout the presentation. It's just easier. We're really happy to be here. Thanks for having us, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, and Director Unsworth. So for today, our agenda is, I'll give a background on this program, the legislation history leading up to where we are today in our current program and the current goals, strategies, and objectives, including performance measures. We have in your supplemental materials the goals, objectives, strategies document. It was adopted in February 2013, and it has key performance measures and date or years associated with those as our guiding document for success currently. So we'll give you an update on where we are with meeting performance measures, and then next steps moving toward the future of this very valuable program for recreational anglers around Puget Sound. So the sheltered waters of Puget Sound, the Strait of Juan de Fuca, have historically been very significant, substantial fishing grounds for salmon and marine fish for recreational anglers. And angler effort, measured in terms of angler trips, peaked in the late 70s, in the 80s, very strong, and then took a big dive basically as we got into the early 90s. Probably remember in 94, that was a big El Nino year, and salmon fisheries were essentially closed on the coast. And moving into the 90s, we had the listing of Puget Sound Chinook on the endangered species list as threatened in 1999. So we had a dip here in the 90s. It rose a bit in the 2000s, and then angler trips have kind of increased a bit and stabilized through the 2000s. So in 1993, the legislature created the Puget Sound Recreational Salmon and Marine Fish Enhancement Program, and the RCW is 77.105. The legislature recognized that recreational fishing opportunities have been dwindling for salmon and marine fish over time, as you saw in that previous slide, and that investments made in recreational fishing programs will repay the people of the state many times over in increased economic activity and improved quality of life. The intent of this legislation is to improve the recreational fishing opportunities from current levels and increase the economic benefits from the fishery, recognizing the unique recreational experience provided by the winter salmon fishery, especially winter blackmouth. So blackmouth are immature Chinook salmon that are legal size to catch in the fishery, so 22 inches total length and larger. And they reside and feed in Puget Sound. And they recognize the number of angler trips as the measure of fishing opportunity. Department responsibilities per this 1993 legislation were very focused on the production of 3 million yearling Chinook in Puget Sound. And the culture strategy for these has been a delayed release, so holding the juvenile Chinook in freshwater longer than they would naturally remain to encourage them to reside in Puget Sound and not migrate out to the ocean as they normally would. And so about a 15-month holding period for these yearlings was traditional, and about 3 months for sub-yearlings, and we'll go into those differences in a bit. Also, the focus was to solicit support from cooperative projects, conduct research on salmon production opportunities, bottom fish research, implement enhancement efforts, utilize hatchery programs to improve recreational fishing, and provide a agency-designated program coordinator. So Ryan Lothrop and myself are the coordinator, serve the coordinator role. We work with the Citizen Oversight Committee and meet with them quarterly, and we meet with external entities as well to coordinate the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lori, pardon my interruption. I just want to go back and make sure. Maybe you're going to talk about it, but back in 1993, it was 3 million fish, but that's decreased over time. Are you going to speak to that?
Yes.
Thank
yes.
You.
Sure. So we're going into the history here. Sure.
Just for a little education for the East Sider. Now, you're talking about the black mouth. Do those reside
yes.
there in the sound for a while, then go on out and come back and spawn, or what's the life cycle of those?
Yes, so typically the black mouth reside in Puget Sound and longer and are caught in our fisheries. They're targeted in our fisheries when they get up to about 22 inches total length. But normally the Chinook salmon life cycle is to migrate after about 1 year out to the ocean and feed and grow out, you know, migrating clear up to Alaska sometimes for about 3 years, coming back as 4 or 5 year olds. So moving along with the history, in 2003, State Senate Bill 5062 created our Citizen Oversight Committee for PSRFE. It consists of at least 7 members with broad representation of sport fishing interests around the west side of the state, around Puget Sound. Members serve 2-year terms without compensation at the appointment of the director, and they may be reappointed. The coordinators, Ryan and I, meet at least quarterly with the Oversight Committee and advise the department on all aspects of PSRFE, review and provide guidance on the annual budget and proposed enhancement of marine fish and salmon. In 2010, we went through a state auditor's office audit of the program. And in 2011, new legislation was adopted in response to that audit. And it focused on removing that statutory production goal of the 3 million Chinook yearlings, as Commissioner Carpenter mentioned, and instead focused on performance-based goals. So the 3 million yearling release, it's a delayed release program, as I mentioned, 15 months holding in freshwater, a lot of extra feed costs and hatchery facility rearing costs. And there were low survival rates over time, so very high cost per fish. And basically, the agency could not achieve that statutory goal, the 3 million. So instead, in this 2011 legislation, the goal was to establish outcome-oriented goals and objectives that are aligned with the Hatchery Scientific Review Group, HSRG, recommendations. And evaluating effectiveness of the program was part of this legislation, establishing angler trips as the primary metric for evaluation, and then annual reports to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, as we're doing today, and biennial reports to the legislature. And in your supporting materials, you have the goals and objectives document that came out of that 2011 legislative process. So just a bit more background on the program as far as funding. It started out in 1994 as an annual surcharge of $10 for recreational fishing in Puget Sound marine areas and Lake Washington. Anglers were basically willing to pay an extra $10 for improved opportunities of recreational fishing. And the funds have been deposited in the enhancement account of the Wildlife Fund. There's about a $1.1 million to $1.8 million budget annually. But then in 1998, the funding became a percentage of each saltwater and combination fishing license sold. The budget in 2013-15 biennium, as planned, was a total of $1.3 million. Most of that, almost $1 million, for hatchery production costs of our programs. Also fish health monitoring and treatment. A little bit there, $10,000 for Lake Washington sockeye lock counts. Over $100,000 in coated wire tagging expenses. And for those of you who don't know, the coated wire tag is an etched code on a little piece of wire about the size of the tip of a pencil lead that gets injected into the snouts of these salmon so that we can track them later with sampling and monitoring programs using electronic detection equipment. The coordinator fund for the coordinator salaries, a small portion of the salaries is about $47,000, and then we have indirect and overhead, of course. This table shows our oversight committee members. They represent diverse communities around Puget Sound and Western Washington. You can see the names up here. We've got three subcommittees, the Hatchery Evaluation, Legislative, and Alternative Funding Committees that work on particular issues in those three areas. This map shows our marine catch areas of Puget Sound that are covered by this program, starting with the just east of the CQ River here with Area 5 and 6 in the Strait, into the San Juan Islands up to Point Roberts for Area 7, 8, 1, 8, 2, and 9 in North Sound. We have Central Sound represented by Areas 10, 11, South Sound 13, and Hood Canal Area 12. And the program also covers Lake Washington. This graph shows a survival rate on the vertical y-axis and release year of summer fall Chinook on the horizontal axis. And it shows that trend of declining survival rates through time. It's theorized due to habitat degradation, both human-caused and natural water quality issues and so forth, that survival rates have decreased for Chinook and other species in the Sound. And so we are working on strategies with our hatchery programs to help survival increase. As mentioned before, due to the high cost of rearing yearlings and yet the low contribution rate that we found in Puget Sound fisheries, the program has shifted over time to production of sub-yearling Chinook. Again, these are, we call them also zero-age. And they're represented by the blue line. The red line are the yearlings. And so over time, you can just see that we've decreased production of the yearlings. After that 2010 audit, really did shift. And then green line is the total production with PSRFE funding. This map shows the areas of Puget Sound, but with our production facilities and the number produced in this PSRE program. We have a grand total shown in the yellow box of 8.35 million sub-yearling Chinook currently produced, 1.04 yearling Chinook, and 120,000 coho. The coho are just up here at the Wallace. That's our only coho program. We have Glenwood Springs, Hoodsport, Hupp Springs, Mentor, Garrison, Voigt's Creek, Icy Creek, Big Seuss Creek, and then Ballard Locks for the sockeye count. This graph shows an example of the contribution of PSRFE fish to winter recreational fisheries based on coated wire tag recoveries for brood years 2006 to 11. And we can just see here that there's a diversity of groups represented in the catch in Area 11, Central Sound. These fish are milling about throughout the Sound. The majority, the pink here, 59%, were South Puget Sound sub-yearlings, followed by, in the gray, Hood Canal fall yearlings, and the green, 9%, mid-Puget Sound fall sub-yearlings. And we, again, gather this information from the coated wire tag recoveries that are sampled using electronic detection equipment. Now we get to where we are currently with our goals, strategies, and objectives with this program. The goals document you have is our guiding document. We work with the Oversight Committee to make steady progress toward achieving performance measures by the deadlines. And in that document, we have defined the purpose of the PSRB is to conserve, enhance, and promote recreational fisheries within Puget Sound and Lake Washington. The overall program goal is to improve recreational fishing opportunities and increase the economic benefits. The key outcome performance measure, so the measure of our success, is increasing angler trips by 5% per biennium. This graph shows angler trips on the vertical axis versus year, fishing year, and we have estimated Puget Sound recreational angling trips, and the target for PSRFE in achieving that 5% increase per biennium, that target is projected from where we are currently at about 600,000 angler trips, steadily increasing by 5% every 2 years to eventually get up to this average line from 1970 to 90 average of just under 1.4 million angler trips. So by 2020, we hope to be at about 700,000 angler trips in Puget Sound. In the goals document that you have, there are four key strategies outlined that we follow. Increase effectiveness of hatcheries in producing salmon for the recreational fishery in Puget Sound. Improve marketing and remove obstacles to anglers participating. Improve bottom fish fisheries with a long-term strategy, and stabilize and enhance resources for this program. So with the increased effectiveness of hatcheries strategy, we have the objectives of reviewing salmon production programs and facilities in Puget Sound to better understand their capabilities, limitations, and ways to increase the contribution rate. Minimize the cost per fish of hatchery salmon caught in the Puget Sound marine fisheries. Evaluate potential to improve fishing opportunities with artificial production of other salmon species such as coho, and increase the survival of Lake Washington sockeye. Under this strategy, the performance measure that we've made quite a bit of progress on is a draft report that was completed at the end of 2014. It's still a draft. It's being reviewed by staff and will be circulated around the oversight committee. But it calculates and summarizes survival rates, contribution rates to the Puget Sound fishery, and cost per fish for all hatcheries. And we'll show you some of those data in a minute. So this information will be used in the next few months to maximize hatchery performance through planning with our oversight committee. This graph shows survival to adult return, which is abbreviated SAR, and sport fishery contribution rate in Puget Sound for the sub-yearling summer fall Chinook. The blue bars represent the survival to adult return. Now, this is total survival, so all tag hatchery salmon that are caught anywhere, Alaska, Canada, California, Oregon, Washington, and escapement as well, the hatcheries. And then that is divided by the total tagged hatchery salmon released. Whereas the red line is the sport fishery contribution rate. So that's just those tagged hatchery Chinook that ended up in the Puget Sound sport fishery divided by the total hatchery tagged salmon released. So 2005 is kind of a better year for survival. It's been steady in the last 3 years, a little uptick here in contribution rate. And again, the group is really trying to improve those survival and contribution rates. For yearling Chinook, we have the same graph here. Yearlings are released at a bigger size, so they survive a little bit better. On average up here, about 0.6%. The other graph on average is about 0.4. And we've got contribution rate fluctuating, a little uptick here toward 2010. We only have through 2010 because our database, cutterwire tag recoveries, it takes a while for all the data to come in, but we update as far as we can. For cost per fish in this hatchery evaluation report, we've got some preliminary estimates. We used as a tool, shown by the data in the red bars here, something called FishCap, which Fish Program is working with our hatchery program. They've got just 2012 data in there, but it's actual cost to produce these different production groups. The names of the groups are on the horizontal axis. We've got Garrison, Glenwood, Minner. The zeros are the sub-yearlings, and the ones are the yearlings, Icy Creek, Hoodsport, and so on. The blue bar is the PSRFE portion of the total cost estimated by just this 1 year of data in FishCap, as a model, and more data will be added to that, so to increase the accuracy. For instance, this hood support bar, there's some problem there with probably an underestimate from FishCap. But again, it's a start, and it's a tool that'll be very useful in the future for cost per fish estimates and improving efficiencies of our hatchery program. So this strategy has been very exciting for us in recent years. Improve marketing and remove obstacles for anglers getting involved with fishing. We've done a lot of outreach education work, which we're really proud of, and it's been great to connect with communities out there. These objectives are to increase awareness of opportunities supported by PSRFE. The goal is a 10% increase in awareness per biennium. Develop marketing tools to encourage participation and educate new anglers, and promote fisheries on healthy stocks that are currently underutilized, such as chum, even dogfish, which are plentiful in the Sound, and cutthroat. I'm going to turn a few slides over to Ryan Lothrop here. He's been very active going out into these communities, doing clinics, a booth at sports shows, and so on, all kinds of social media efforts. And so Ryan's going to go ahead and explain some of these slides.
Myself and Oversight Committee members have participated in 2014 at the Puyallup Sportsman Show. We had a booth right next to the WDFW to, you know, kind of market fishing in Puget Sound and other outreach tools to, and also to help reach some goals and objectives on the sidebar, which I'll talk about in the upcoming slides. But we also provided some materials to be displayed at other sports shows. Throughout the state. And we continue to look at, you know, try to best use our resources and time to get out there and try to reach new anglers. Some of these shows, you know, you have anglers that have been fishing for years always showing up, and we're trying to find alternate routes to get out there and recruit new anglers, those who are interested in fishing. JBLM clinics, that's something we started with the help of Bruce Boulding with the Inland Program. He started going out there the start of 2014. And what is going on there at the base, Joint Base Lewis-McChord, is every month there's new recruits, staff coming into the base. And so it's a continual flow of new people that live in Washington for at least 3 years, 5 years, or they might retire here. And so what we're doing is sitting there with the Outdoor Rec Program on base, right next to them, and tag teaming, kind of relaying information, you know, where can you go fishing, how do you buy your license, and then also in conjunction with that, we're advertising fishing clinics and some seminar series that we're going to be doing this summer, like pink fishing, coho, chum.
And this may take us way off in the weeds, but when a service member is stationed here, do they get to buy a resident price?
If they're active duty, they're eligible for resident price.
Okay, oh. Thank you.
Yep. So we make sure they're aware of that, that they can buy their license on base. And in one of the upcoming slides, I'll kind of show a little analysis we have on that. So the next slide here, Fish Washington website. That was developed by the Inland Program as well. But I myself jumped on board with, you know, the intentions of PSRFE to provide information on how, when, and where to go fishing. We have various tools out there, and last year we split up the website to have kind of a marine homepage and a freshwater homepage, and we have videos linked in there, some links to like dockside creel fishing reports, and also some other parts of our website where we do talk about how to fish out there specifically. And contained within this, we have each marine area has a homepage. Area 5 out in CQ has a homepage. Area 13 South Sound has a homepage. So we have a calendar of species, of the best time to go fishing, what species you can expect to catch, and also where the keystone species out there to fish for. And so we have a lot of linkages into there, as well as to homepages for species. And so then each time we upload a new fishing video, which will be in the next slide, that actually gets put in that species homepage. And then, one more thing on the last slide. The other new tool that we've been, I'm one of the administrators on, there are a few of us out there, that we have an Instagram account, and so we're trying to reach a new demographic out there, you know, younger generation folks, even younger than me, that use Instagram, but a lot of people do. It's kind of one of the bigger social media avenues out there besides Facebook. And so, like, this is an example. That picture up there is coho fishing out there near Port Townsend. And so just kind of advertising fly fishing for coho and opportunities that are out there, you know, what's hot or, you know, what the test fishers are seeing out there and various things. So just trying to reach a new crowd out there and get some information out there. So this is the video slide. So we've been working on producing short videos, anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes long. I try to keep them short because some people's attention spans aren't quite there. But we also want to provide accurate information, you know, necessary information for conservation. When you're promoting fisheries, you want to, you know, have the proper handling techniques and et cetera. So currently we have on the website through the YouTube account that the WDFW has, summer trolling for Chinook, dogfish shark fishing, which we actually just did in Bud Bay Inlet with Dave Lowry. Chum fishing I did last fall in South Sound, and pink fishing, which is one we just threw up there from some video footage we had from a couple years ago, kind of laying out the very basics on how to fish for pink. And one that I have a lot of footage that's going to take some time to work on is the Sea Run Coastal Cutthroat video. So part of that, for this coming year, it's a pink year, you know, we have a forecast of 6.8 million pink salmon to the Puget Sound, 14 million to the Fraser River system, and some of those will cross through U.S. waters. And so with it, we do see a shift in license sales during odd even years. And so we're going to just try to get some more information out there. We'd like to retain those anglers who only show up on odd years to fish for pink salmon, try to get them fish, you know, for coho and other species. But a lot of times, you know, people are unaware they can go catch pretty good tasting pink salmon, if you think they're tasty, in the saltwater. A lot of them fish in freshwater, so I'll kind of relay that information, what opportunities are out there, where to go. So we're going to actually develop and we're in the process right now of developing an interactive map that kind of shows the presence, absence of pink salmon out there, then kind of the hot spots. You know, are they piling in out CQ, you know, late July or not? And then we're going to try to do in-season video production, create some marine fishing ones and actually freshwater ones as well.
Good stuff.
And then, okay, so this is the survey, kind of jumping back to the sports shows that we went to. We use that to figure out if we could, get the information from the public to establish a baseline of awareness of what PSRFE is by the general public throughout the state of Washington. So we use an online, non-random survey last year, January through March, for 3 months. I believe we had a news release associated with that. At the sports show, we were advertising that you can go online, fill out the survey. We had a lot of email traffic. We use Facebook, you know, social media to get the word out to fill out the survey. And for an incentive, one of our oversight committee members helped us get a good deal on a fishing rod giveaway. And we had a pretty decent sample size. I was impressed. We got nearly 2,000 survey responses filled out. And across the board, that equated to we had at least one response from, I believe, every county in the state of Washington except maybe two. So it reached outside of Puget Sound. And we adjusted by county of license purchased to try to deal with the bias associated with everyone that knows about Puget Sound filling out the survey. And and we used various metrics that we averaged across the board to get that awareness factor. And so the geographic region that is... What region does PSRFE encompass? The funding, how does the program get funded? What projects do we sponsor, co-sponsor, or, you know, have the potential to work with? and what species can we help improve fisheries in Puget Sound. And so we have established a baseline that we can replicate in 2 years, or actually that would be next year that we would follow up with, see what our progress is, and the goal was to increase it by 10%. But so we have about 30% awareness factor out there from this non-random survey. And then the next goal, improve recreational bottom fisheries. The two main objectives to reach that goal is to support research to evaluate the risks and uncertainties associated with the culture of bottom fish and artificial habitats. And by culture, we're looking specifically to when we had we were working with NOAA on lingcod research for hatchery propagation. And then the second bullet point down there, use outreach and education to decrease mortality on rockfish. And so I'll be discussing a few points on some progress we have on that objective. So on the rockfish recovery side, 2 years ago, 2013, during essentially the halibut and lingcod season in all of Puget Sound, we asked the question, if you caught a rockfish, did you use a descending device? And we conducted this survey through our WDFW dockside creel sampling unit, and we came up with an estimate of 6% use, which is a starting point. It's a ways to improve, and that's kind of why we're here, to help increase survival of rockfish. But and so this coming year, we started back up in May, and we're actually going to run through at least September. We're talking about going year-round and potentially even every year, not just every other year, because of ESA implications on rockfish. The next objective, stabilize and enhance the resources. That was the goal, excuse me. The objective is to increase the license sales for those who fish in Puget Sound or in Lake Washington for salmon. The second objective is license fees and contribution rates of the enhancement FUD would be adjusted regularly to reflect the cost of a living. And that kind of deals with, you know, we started with a $10 surcharge, and they really haven't, the program has not seen an increase in that. $10 10 years ago isn't the same $10 this year. So we're trying to do more with less or the same with what we had before. So it's kind of that negative feedback cycle that we're trying to find an alternative route to increase funding for this program. And the last point up there, pursue alternative funding resources. We have a subcommittee there that is looking into that to try to generate some money outside the department to use within this program. So jumping back to the JBLM newcomer outreach efforts that myself and Bruce Boulding have primarily been sitting at base talking to new military members showing up in Washington. So what I did is I went back to the two even years, and we had, because we have that even odd year cycle going on out there, and so the average was $47.90 for license sales, and in 2014 the license sales on base, so these are only on post license sale purchases, was $6,600. And so when you sum all that up, you see an increase in 29% of license sales on base. Whether that's directly tied to our outreach efforts on base or a strong Columbia River fishery or ocean run or just economy, or is the base increasing in staffing, that can be that's, you know, needs to be looked at further. But any uptick in license sales is good, and I think we definitely reached I think we had direct contact to at least 700 or 800 members from their first day on base, not necessarily first day on base, but that generates into reaching out to their family and other new members that are showing up and their colleagues. So I think we're seeing some good action there. Further on the stabilizing and enhancing resources, I think that's backwards, yeah. All right.
So I'm going to go into next steps briefly. As we look to the future, we're using that goals and objectives document as our guiding document and framework. For 2015, we're going to have a report completed that evaluates production of other species for their cost-benefit ratio, timing of fishing opportunities, and ability to attract and retain newer lapsed anglers. We'll have a report completed that identifies alternative sockeye rearing strategies to increase survival rate of Lake Washington sockeye. So we have our work cut out for us here in 2015. Under improve marketing and remove obstacles, next steps, we'll work toward identifying underutilized fish stocks in Puget Sound. We're already making headway on this with flounder, cutthroat, chum, and pink. Develop 5 new tools in 2017 to increase awareness of opportunities. Again, we're already making great progress on this, as Ryan mentioned, with the different clinics and social media, website, and so forth. And under improved recreational bottom fisheries, our next steps are to complete a report in 2015 synthesizing that lean cod culture work and provide recommendations for the future. Improve angler identification of rockfish species by 50% by 2017. Increase use of descender tools on rockfish to 50% of encounters, and that's by 2017. Decrease angler encounters of rockfish by 10%. Also, that's due in 2017. For our overall conclusions, just want to say PSRFE, in our view, has extreme value for citizens of Washington State, particularly Puget Sound and Lake Washington recreational anglers. We estimate that 42,000 Chinook are caught in Puget Sound annually. That's based on data from 2013. And that 29% of sport-caught Chinook in Puget Sound are from the PSRFE program. And those values are estimated based on coated tag recovery proportions of the different hatchery groups that our program produces. We estimate 481,000 salmon angler trips annually, attributed to, in part, PSRFE. And economic impact to the state of $30 million in value. And we estimated that based on using our estimated angler trips and the Thomas Wege report, economics report, with the adjusted for a consumer price index of $63 per angler trip in value. And with that, we'll take any questions. We do have Dave Knutson, our chair of the Oversight Committee, with a couple words for us first.
All right. Well, thank you. Is this good?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for having me. I'm the PSRFE Oversight Committee Chair. I got Norm with me to keep me in line here. And we wanted to have a couple words from the Oversight Committee. So thank you once again. I think we were here about a year ago with a report. And it's nice to see new commissioners here as well. So the first message I'd have is that the technical staff, or the staff, I would say, is Ryan and Lori are superior. It's great to see enthusiasm. It's great to see programs growing. Their hard work is definitely recognized by the Oversight Committee. And at times, I have to say that they're the messenger to us. And so they get beat up by the Oversight Committee at times when they're merely the person carrying a message to us. But luckily, they have broad shoulders, and that works out well. So the history of the PSRE program, you know, has gone through, but a couple points I wanted to highlight were that one is that it really started as a Chinook program, a blackmouth program. And, you know, looking through the slides here, you know, just one comment I would have is that there weren't a whole lot of pictures of blackmouth, weren't a whole lot of pictures of Chinook. And a lot of that has to do with the times. You know, we have pinks coming on, and it's a strong economic boom, and it's a great way to get people out to go fishing and learn how to fish. But the root and core of the program has been Chinook. It's Chinook or the sizzle, to quote somebody that's recently left the department. But and the program was a self-tax. It was set up by anglers. It was lobbied to the legislature to tax us at $10 because we wanted to enhance our fisheries. We wanted to build upon what the department was doing, and it wasn't to backfill production. It was to increase opportunity, increase production. So, and that really comes back to the goal of the program really was what Commissioner Smith said earlier today about the Hunter Education Program, is getting people on the water. You know, you alluded it to hunting, but same thing for fishing. You get people on the water, and then they become a little more enthusiastic about wanting to protect Puget Sound, clean up Puget Sound, do all the hard work that is necessary. So without, you know, some consumption, some attitude of wanting to be out on the water, you know, the change in the state can happen rapidly to lose that heritage, and that's obviously something that the angler was concerned about and created this self-tax. So it's overall, you saw our goals, you saw our objectives, you know, it's a much more robust goal and an objective program than it was in the past. With that 3 million number once upon a time, it was an unachievable goal, and now I think it's really more directed towards a broad base of how do you build support for a program. Now, having said all that, you know, it doesn't mean that the Oversight Committee doesn't have concerns. We do have concerns out there. You know, fish survival in Puget Sound is terribly low. Puget Sound is obviously hurting, and, you know, we need to keep monitoring that and make adjustments to production. We've adjusted from yearlings to zero-age fish, but, you know, the ocean could turn, which it is doing right now, and perhaps yearlings will start to be robust again. And so you need to keep an eye on things as we go. But another real concern of the Oversight Committee is it gets to, and both Norm and I sit on the Sport Fish Advisory Committee as well, and that is Marine Area 910 being, you know, Chinook retention in Marine Area 10 being reduced, or excuse me, closed, and Marine Area 9 being reduced to a number that really is going to end up being a very short season. So, and getting back to the whole north of Falcon process being broken, the PSRE, you know, as Lori pointed out, the dollars of PSRE of this self-tax, self-regulated tax is funding production. And, you know, we are having trouble harvesting the fish that we raise in Marine Areas 9 and 10 currently under this coming season. If you look through 2007 to 2014, 54% of the Chinook harvested in Marine Area 10 were coming from hatcheries that the PSRE program supports. Doesn't mean that we raise all those fish, because at some of those hatcheries we just raise percentages of them. But the bottom line is that the production that we're funding is we're having difficulties harvesting those fish just due to current regulations. So as a chair, as Norm's here as well, so he's going to have to take on this responsibility with me as well. But we need to work on communication with the department as well. It's limited at times on what the true intent of the Oversight Committee is. At times, the Oversight Committee feels like we're better informed than the average citizen on the corner, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're really truly oversight. So I think we have 13 volunteers, and I appreciated Director Unsworth's comments earlier today talking about working with the customer over the next 18 months, and I think the Oversight Committee is a great example of a place where we would love to work with the department and become a little more active on moving forward on reaching our goals and objectives. So how that is done is kind of the big question mark, and that's where I think the Oversight Committee needs to put that upon ourselves, but also, you know, on the backs of the department to work together and achieve our goals and objectives. So with that, I'd gladly answer any questions if people had of me, but thank you.
Mr. Mankin?
Yeah, thank you very much. Informative presentation. I have a question, though. If you would go, please, to slide number 12.
Sure.
Which is survival rate of Puget Sound summer, fall Chinook. And Dave, you mentioned that production was down. Survival was down. I think that's an understatement.
Yeah.
if that was business revenue, they'd be bankrupt. When do you reach a point where you say, I'm going to give up on this, or I'm going to do something radically different? That's not very encouraging. That's terrible survivals. And, you know, you can look at survivals of 1% or less, and many times almost zero survival, when in the past we had survivals that were 6 and 7%, And back in the late 60s and 1970s, if you look at coho survivals, the highest ever attained were in British Columbia at one of their hatcheries where they got 35% of the fish back. So that's the range of survivals that we have had in the past. What is, in your estimation, what is the cause of that kind of a decline in survival in our Chinook?
Not a question to me or to
them. Anybody on the panel. The audience?
Well, we like the work being done by the Salish Sea Marine Survival Project, and Long Live the Kings, and Michael Schmidt heads up that, coordinating that work to get at these answers. What is going on in the Salish Sea, Puget Sound? Tremendous population growth in the area, habitat degradation in the fresh and the salt. Issues with bottom-up processes and top-down, predators, whether it's seals that are exploding in population in the sound, or the basic zooplankton and the food web that supports feeding these fish as they grow and rear in the sound. What about the marine conditions out there that we can't control, this warm blob that's been spreading this year from the Gulf of Alaska clear down California coast, unprecedented warming of the sea surface temperatures, creating further uncertainty in our run size expectations for forecasts for this year. And we just have many factors, I think, all coming together. And still, in the face of this, we have extreme interest in recovering Puget Sound, anglers that would like to teach their kids to fish and continue fishing, and it's a unique fishery in Puget Sound, and we need to look out for the sustainability of the resource and the fishery in Puget Sound. So I think our guiding document lays out strategies that if we follow those, we're going to get some good work done. So anyone else?
If I may speak. As a layperson, you asked the question, what happened to our Puget Sound salmon? From my observations of being on the water frequently, everything that Lori has said is quite accurate. We have literally terraformed or re-terraformed the Puget Sound basin. We have taken and degraded habitat. We have introduced pollutants into Puget Sound that we are still trying to figure out what they are, much less how do they affect the fish. I'll make a quick reference to a National Marine Fisheries study on coho. You may have seen that presentation, but they're collecting water off of, I believe, 512, putting coho fry in the water, or coho adults in the water. I've helped them capture those adults, and all the fish die. They don't survive. So we have something serious going on. So, but in answer to your question, when do we give up? My answer to that is we are trying very hard. This commission's trying very hard. The department's trying very hard. And the sports people are trying to rise up and support things like hatchery reform. Until we find out whether hatchery reform works, given today's habitat, until we find out whether salmon can be saved, I would say that anything, including what we do with PSREF, is worth it in terms of trying to save the resource. Because if we just give up, I do believe that the resource will continue to dwindle and we will end up like the North Atlantic coast of America, which once had a robust Atlantic salmon fishery. We'll end up with no fishery at all.
Yeah, those are all excellent answers, and I buy into them. I have one other question for you. Your organization is called the Puget Sound Recreational Salmon and Marine Fish Enhancement Program, but I have difficulty in finding anything in here with regard to marine fish enhancement. I have found, I think, let's see, where did that go? I found one comment here that says, support research to evaluate the risks and uncertainties associated with the culture of bottom fish in artificial habitats. And it was mentioned, I think, Dave, you mentioned that there was a support coming from the NOAA Lingcod Culture Project. Those are the only things I heard today that that addressed marine fish culture. And then it also said artificial reefs. Can you kind of fill me in on what you're doing in that category?
Commissioner Macon, I'll address that briefly. So we had supported financially NOAA doing kind of a research project on lingcod hatchery production. And NOAA was doing some research on, you know, releasing and kind of what do they do in the natural environment? Do they get caught back in the recreational fisheries? And funding, and we were just a small piece of the pie for supporting that. That funding dried up, and so our funding is not going that direction anymore. So the next step on that process is actually myself and Dr. Dave Lowry will write a feasibility report on that lingcod research to see, you know, does it work? Should we be doing it with ESA implications on rockfish, et cetera, that kind of stuff? But do they recruit to recreational angling community? So that's far specifically to that point. That's kind of our next immediate task associated with that goal. I don't know if Dr. Dave is here, if he wants to speak to that as well. But got it? That covered all?
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I guess really quickly, the way I would have answered both questions is that with the marine fish, we never got past the excellent work on how to get into production of those fish. And there's a limited set of dollars. And we have been we have a lot of hatchery production that we pay for. And perhaps we need to start looking at the intent of the program from the start was to be innovative and to look for new ways to increase our opportunities. And what has happened over time, I believe, is that we have gotten stuck with production groups that we constantly turn out, and our innovation has been dwindled. And that's a part where when I say fish survival, Puget Sound is hurting, we need to look for innovative ideas and start to fund some of those ideas. And perhaps that means funding less hatchery production, especially with the trend for harvest. If that's going to start to decrease, then we need to start to look at ways to increase what we have. So,
thank you.
I really appreciate the work that you're doing in the first place. And I should mention that I served on the endorsement board for the Columbia River Salmon and Steelhead, which is a similar program in that it's a self-tax by a user group for Columbia Salmon and Steelhead anglers. And one of the questions I had was on page 4, it was slide 8. In the past, you mentioned that you raised annually $1.1 million to $1.8 million through that self-tax on anglers. And then that got transferred to a different fund and became a percentage. Now, and I see that your expenditure or projected expenditure of $1.3 million roughly over a two-year period. So what is your annual budget now as it's a percentage of that fee?
Yeah, so a little background on the percentage formula. So it's most of the license types excluding freshwater.
Right.
But so there's a survey that gets conducted annually. And they, by license type, they determine a participation rate in Puget Sound fishing or Lake Washington for salmon. And then that percentage is applied to the license, total license sales,
right,
and then based on the $10 surcharge. So it's kind of coming from total license fees collected. But, yeah, so our annual budget last year was $1.3 million. And I believe we don't have a forecast for the next buy-in and see where we are. But, you know, based on license sales and a pink year, we ought to be pretty much in the same ballpark.
Right, yeah. We find on the endorsement board that if you have a good spring salmon return, our sales just go
yep.
are very high.
So thank you for that one.
Yeah. I have to express the same concern as the other commissioner, Colin. If we're just constantly funding production and putting them in the sound and we're getting returns as dismal as this, then, yeah, I would suggest maybe you shift some of your funding into research about why, because it does no one any good to just kill fish for the purpose of production. And that sounds terrible. I'm a sport hang. I lived here on this side of the mountains for 20 years, and I enjoyed the blackmouth fishing through the winter. It was one of my favorite things to do. And to see this decline is extremely disappointing to me because you're right, it could have significant economic impact within the Puget Sound Basin for generated by fishing, by sport fishing. And I'd love to see that recovery. But if we're just putting good money after bad into throwing fish into this basin just for the sake of production and not getting the returns, we need to look at that, I feel. Even though I would support any kind of improved sport fishing. I also want to commend you for your marketing efforts. Your success, that was a very bright idea getting down to the base. You've had, and it obviously shows results. Mm-hmm. And I'm very impressed with that. I also wanted to mention that I do a lot of seminar work on the other side of the mountains in central Washington. People really respond to seminars. They're hungry for information. Even though they're seasoned anglers, they still come to every seminar we offer just to see if they can learn anything new. And they're very valuable for new anglers. And also, I also do web-based television, videos. Extremely valuable to new people. And also, again, seasoned anglers are always looking for a better way. And those are very powerful ways to present that information, particularly in a how-to format.
Yep. One thing on that, we've looked at trying to get some of those videos on, like, some of the public TV channels, local channels, and we've had some success, but we're still trying to reach out. So that's something we're also pursuing, getting those 3 to 5, 7-minute how-to videos out there.
Right.
So, yeah, that's something we want to continue pursuing.
Yeah, I encourage all of you to check out the Fish Washington portion of our website and click on the videos. And I learn something every time I watch them, but they're really good. Ryan and Danny Garrett are hosting a few of them. And
if I could, just helpful. One more thing. In my experience of reaching out marketing in Central Washington is many of the Chambers of Commerce, a surprising number of the Chambers of Commerce, when they list all of the activities that are available to people that come to their town, fishing isn't included. Yep. It's not even on the list. And so I've made progress in that respect.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question more for Norm and Dave. I think, Dave, you brought up that you thought there might be some wisdom in strengthening the oversight function of the oversight committee. What did you have in mind? Do either of you have any specific ideas that you want to put on the table about how to make it more of an oversight committee?
Yeah, I think thank you for the question. An area where I would see the Oversight Committee could be more effective is when it comes to creating our budgets and what we fund. So it gets back to all these questions that we have had, is that, you know, we raise 3.2 million fish at Seuss Creek. We raise 800,000 at Voights Creek or something like that. Anyways, we have gotten stuck with that production group, and when it comes to cutting fish production, it's not an easy thing to do and not politically easy thing to do as well, but it's taken away some of the innovative ideas of this program from the very start. And I think if the Oversight Committee could have a more active role in helping the department develop what the budget should be compared to seeing the budget would be a first step that I would see. Do you have something to add, Norm?
Just briefly, I don't know whether, I think the Michael picked me up. What Dave has said holds merit. When you start talking about fisheries and you start talking about reducing production, the PSREF folks were put in that position when the legislature started cutting budget to the department. And the department needed to buy feed. We saw declining survival rates for yearling fish. And so in answer to part of what you were talking about is that instead of funding a yearling program, we took a look at the residualization of the zero age releases. In other words, that year's fish and the residualization rate contributed to the blackmouth fishery. Somewhat similarly as to just raising yearlings. So we shifted money from raising yearlings into producing zeros. However, we're still watching that the survival rates decline. So when the department convinced us to do that, it took away, we actually stepped in and helped with production of those smolts, those zero-age smolts. Now that we are looking at some innovative ideas, I believe there's some significant concern, especially to the public, if they hear that we're reducing the production of zero-age Chinook within Puget Sound at a time when we're watching declining survival rates at the same time, they interpret that as a lack of opportunity or a removal of yet more opportunity. However, without looking at alternative methods of or innovative methods of perhaps raising fish, and I think that's what Dave's alluding to, that we have to find the resources from somewhere. And if the legislature won't give it to us, then we may be forced to look at some rather serious reductions within this program if we want to help in the research areas of why are fishy dying and not returning. Thank you.
Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some questions, comments, and maybe some suggestions, and you can take them in any order you want. But Commissioner Graybill made a great comment about the winter blackmouth fishery. That's why this whole program was started. I mean, in the beginning, it was to promote winter blackmouth fishing, sell licenses, keep people on the water, generate revenue throughout, and it was a success. One comment is, as on the bottom of slide 32, pursue alternative funding sources. Has there been any thought given to going out and doing some outreach for public-private participation in this? So you can answer that when I'm getting done, if you want. I have a suggestion as far as the outreach piece. I would recommend that consideration be given to this group participating at the Seattle Boat Show. I know you do the Puget Sound, the Puyallup Sports Show. It's a whole different set of demographics at the Seattle Boat Show. It's the largest boat show on the West Coast. It's a whole different level of participants there. And I can promise you that you can get free seminar participation on a regular schedule. They're over a 10-day, this year a 9-day show, so I'll throw that out. I really appreciate Director Unsworth participating in trying to do this direct marketing pink salmon opportunity thing. I think it's huge. I think if we get out there in front of the, get the public educated that we got, you know, 20 plus million pink salmon coming back. They're easy to catch. You bleed them and ice them. They're good to take home. I think that's a real deal. And we can get a lot of new licensees going this year. One other thing on slide 37, as someone that's from industry, a $63 applied to a angler trip is much outdated. If you haven't bought a boat or a fishing tackle lately, that's a very much an outdated number. So I want to go back to something in my memory bank in 1998. I think the program worked a lot better when we had a $10 surcharge in it. It was directly applied to the program, but then somebody decided to raid the funding in PSRE for some emergency internally at WFW back then. I won't go into the particulars, but I'd like to have that reviewed. I think it should be considered to go back to the $10 direct benefit to this program, and I think it would generate more money, more buy-in by the public. They can measure their opportunity better, and you guys could function better. So any thoughts or comments on any of that, let me know.
Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. All sounds good to me. Thank you.
Thank you.
I agree with the $10 surcharge when it disappeared and got disembedded within the license. It was, good from the department end of things because it increased the cost of licenses to everybody, and then we got a percentage. But I think there's some real value. You know, I love the idea of, you know, putting on my hunting hat here, but something about buying a duck stamp and signing a duck stamp and keeping that duck stamp is just something really special, you know. And, you know, and we don't have a Dungeness stamp, but we do have a Dungeness, you know, endorsement that you have to purchase. The Columbia River one is set the same way, and I think that's an excellent comment because I think it really gets some buy-in in it, and it gives this program a little more autonomy from the department as a whole.
And if needed, it wouldn't have to be $10. That could be revisited. It could be $15. I mean, people want to participate, and they want something for their money. And those two things can work together.
Any other last questions down there? Just one quick one. Do you guys work with the RFEGs? Because I think that would be a natural ally, especially in restoration of habitat and stuff like that.
We haven't recently. I mean, we do, you know, kind of chatter back and forth when we have more likely they have inquiries for resources and information that I have. They do reach out to me. But as far as any actual project we've done together recently, no.
I was just encouraged to at least when they have their
idea. Their
meeting, when they all come together, to just see, because you were spot on with all the whole list of why the fish aren't coming back. I mean, and that list is growing. But I think they're boots on the ground in terms of, you know, a lot of the stream habitat revitalization and remediation. So, okay.
Good point.
I failed to thank the staff that works on this. I think it's real important stuff, engaging with the public and the volunteers that do this. It's real meaningful to the people, and thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
Could you go to that last slide that shows questions? I think that's a young Mr. Carpenter off to the left here.
Historical archives.
Looks like that's in Michigan.